Ready? Good. Today is January the 20th, 2019, and I say hello to my students in front of me and all the sub-students listening around the wide expanse of Jewish existence, despite all our enemies, from within and from without, plain and simple. The question with the going into the army, volunteering for the army, so there's no question that there's a background to this. You can't take the tshuvot out of context. And someone like Reb Menashe Klein, who comes from Hungary, Czechoslovakian Hungary, from that area, certainly there was no feeling of great loyalty to the country, to where you found yourself. And he comes to America, a mature individual, and you notice his feeling here is certainly involving oneself with the army, volunteering for the army. A certain enmity towards the RCA comes across, and you'll see later today where that enmity is coming from. But there's no question he finally ends off the tshuva, where he pokes fun at the RCA and he calls them, what's the word he uses, these are not rabbanim, this is the Erev Rav. And you can see his feelings are much closer to the Rabbinical Alliance, to the RCA, or much closer to Sam Turk than to Seymour Turk. And you have to understand that it's not just the halacha involved. You know, halachically, the Gemara in Shabbos Daf Yutet, the whole question of getting on a boat 3 days before, the whole question of going to war 3 days before, it's open to interpretation. But certainly the majority opinion is very simple, that we paskin the Shulchan Aruch, you see, black and white, even carries over to the Mishnah Berurah, that 3 days before Shabbos, you have to worry about Shabbos. The first 3 days of the week, you only have to worry about the Pair Shabbat. If you didn't make Havdalah, you can make Havdalah again. You can make on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Tuesday evening already, Marav, you can no longer make Havdalah, then you have to be concerned with the next Shabbat. And that's the basic shot in the Gemara. Although there are certainly Rishonim and the Radbaz and others that make it clear that the Gemara is only talking about rabbinic prohibition, but chas v'chalila, you should do something that's going to lead to an Issa D'Oraita, real Chilul Shabbos, and that you have to worry about all the time. Well, if you take that point of view, it makes living very difficult. Forget about going into the army. But traveling, what the Gemara talks about, joining a caravan where you know you'll have to help out on Shabbos and do part of the work, well, how can you travel? You follow, you'll never be able to travel. It's not like today. You can get on a plane, and even going to Australia, which is the furthest I've ever traveled, so it takes 2 days. But you can work it out that you get there long before Shabbos. You can, no problem whatsoever. But two modern times, what travel entailed, all right. You wind up that the Jew can never move beyond. He can never budge. He always has to make these considerations. But that's a minority opinion. That's not the majority opinion. And certainly the Balmar carries the day. And as I said, it filters right down to the Mishnah Berurah. The Aruch HaShulchan seems to be more machmir. But even with the Aruch HaShulchan, the Chumrah is only a lachatchila Chumrah, not a bidi evet Chumrah. And I continue, I'm picking up the next Shiva, Simon Lamed Vav, Chelik Gimel Mishnah Lachat, Simon Lamed Vav. And here too, it's to Rabbi Sam Turk, and their continuing correspondence on this issue, the RCA, the announcement, the protest. Why did you ask them to volunteer to sign up on Shabbos? It means religious Jews can't come. And beginning on page Ayin Vav, he says that someone who volunteers, he says, what is he volunteering for? he's volunteering to be in the Nerva Reserves, and he's going to be a Mechallel Shabbos week after week for years to come. And he says this is not onus. No one is forcing him. And when it comes to this kind of Chillul Shabbos, you have to do everything in your power to avoid it. It's not chad pami. It's not once. You're traveling. You have to get to your destination. You can't help yourself. This is Chillul Shabbos, which is ongoing. And then he comes to the heart of this tshuva. And here you have something which is dynamic. And anyone doing research on this period has to come back to this part of the tshuva. And it is, on one hand, factual. On the other hand, absolutely shocking. And he says, and I'm not only talking about joining the Naval Reserves, he says, even the chaplains, even the rabbis who volunteer, and one of my students wrote to me the whole history of the rabbinate, the Orthodox, and how, why you got involved. So I want to tell you, I know it. It's, you don't have to clue me in. I lived it. I know it. But I haven't reached it yet. I'll deal with that when I deal with the Rav. Then we'll talk about America. But right now we're dealing with Rav Menashe Klein, his attitude, and then I want to go into Germany, and then we'll come to the Rav. As far as I know, that covers everything that's ever been written on this topic in the Halacha L'Maisa. But he says, and even to be a chaplain, it's ongoing Chillul Shabbos. And here you see what forms a person's mind. Experiences we have leave a very lasting impression. I wrote a Haskamah, a new volume is coming out, Chaim Dolfin. It's coming out with a volume now on, very fascinating, on the Lubavitcher Rebbe and Rav Yitzchak Kutner. The volume's essentially Rav Yitzchak Kutner and his relationship with the Lubavitcher Rebbe. So, again, he bothers me to give Haskamah. I don't know how much it helps, but I guess, all right, I'm in the field. I've written also. I've lectured extensively in this on these topics, as you know, 2 years on the Rebbe, 1 year in Rav Hutner. So I wrote out the draft of the Haskamah on Friday, and I left it for Sherry now to type after class. I hope to read it and correct it and then send it on to him, because he's going to the printer tomorrow. Now, so I write at the end of the Haskamah, I want to see if he leaves it in. I write that, forgetting, I write first about the book and Rabbi Hutton, etc. But we'll leave that for another time, and you'll see it when the book comes out. But I write at the end that this book brought me back to my youth, because two of the people that he interviews are Rabbis Joshua Fishman and Elkanah Schwartz. These were two Talmidim in Yeshivat Rabbeinu Chaim in Berlin. Elkanah Schwartz, I don't think will be troubled that a YU Rebbe mentions his name, but for Rabbi Josh Fishman, it may be a problem. And I mention, I knew them from Bnei Akiva, where we struggled how to implement the vision of the land of Israel for the people of Israel in accordance with the Torah of Israel. Eretz Yisrael, Am Yisrael, Al Pi Torah Yisrael. So you see, when I speak about that, not all of you can relate to what I'm saying, but that's a childhood experience that covered my entire life, colors my entire eternity, I can say. So here, Rav Menashe Klein is telling a story, and this story, you don't have to be a great psychologist to understand where he's coming from and why he was so anti-RCA in last week's Shia. And he says, you're telling me about rabbis enlisting Hashem Mekablim Aleihem Misra B'Shem Jewish Chaplain Balas. Again, his command of English is perfect, the transliteration, Jewish Chaplain Balas. And he says, I saw myself how these Jewish chaplains live. When I was in Buchenwald, and Buchenwald was liberated, and the chaplains came Erev Shabbos Kodesh in a jeep, Hitpalalu lifnei ha'amut kabbalat Shabbat, v'chazru limkomom ulamachanotam al ha'jeep b'Shabbat Kodesh. V'heim kadu et atzmam Orthodox chaplains, again transliterated, v'tainatam hayatar shekivin shehem b'chayu kva hudra harutzu'ah. And let me tell you, this little paragraph is dynamite. And have you ever been, there's a museum in Washington, D.C. It may be in a Jewish building, Jewish Welfare Board. I was taken, I saw it, I was in Washington quite a few years ago already. But the first picture you see when you come in is a rabbi whose name you all know, the late Rabbi Heschel Shachter, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, a wonderful Jew, the father of Rabbi Dr. J.J. Shachter. I trust you know the name. And there he is at Buchenwald, leading the services. Picture, beautiful picture. Ed Davin Debanon with the talis and surrounded by tens and tens and tens, if not hundreds, but the picture just shows tens and tens of Jewish troops. Now, what he's saying, and this has to be checked out, but I can understand it. How did Rabbi Shechter get there? Where did he sleep at night? He probably had a Gentile assistant, a non-Jewish assistant, who drove the Jeep. Now, I'm chas v'chalila, I don't want to be matria going on to a Jeep on Shabbos driven by a non-Jew. But these are not normal circumstances, all right? So, amira la'akum, whatever you're going to come up with, is there a tchum here, how far the Jeep had to go? But you're dealing here with a chaplain in the American army, and it's not an easy way to find a solution. This is not the Israeli army. The Israeli army, we have had thousands of tshuva written on Sheilat of Torah in the army, Shabbat, being at the front, bringing food, taking back soldiers. Can I tell you how much has been written? You know how many books have been published. The Rosh Yeshiva of Machon Lev became famous. Rabbi Ramon, from his work, I remember buying it for my grandchildren when they went into the army. His two volumes on Halacha in the army, outstanding. Rav Shlomo Minahar, I had the privilege back in 71 when I started teaching in Michlala. I was with a faculty of Gedolei Yisrael. I mean, I was an Amoritz. A board compared to the people I taught with at that time. And one of them is Rav Shlomo Minhaha. He wrote one of the earliest svarim of Dinei Tzava. So I don't have to tell you how much has been written and worked out halachically, and this is where Tzomet comes in. You all know the Grumma switch, long before they came up with these little wagons that a person can drive to get to Shul Shabbos when Chas v'Chalila is crippled, with the army, there's a tremendous shaylat. In other words, we have to have security patrols at all times. So everyone can understand that in relation to Gaza, in relation to Lebanon, in relation to Syria. It's called in Hebrew, the army functions with about 1,000 Rashi Teva. You can go out of your mind. It's called Batash, Bitachon Shotev. Anyone in the army knows what I'm saying. Bitachon Shotev, Batash. But tell me, what about the Jordanian front? When was the last time someone came across from Jordan? All right, it's happened. It's happened. But certainly, you know, they asked Revelva, Vas Hastas Bikuach Nefesh. What are the statistics? Revelva said, I feel one in a million, Revelva answered. That's a brisker answer. If you knew the Rev, you would have gotten the same answer as his uncle gave. So, but coming across from Jordan, maybe it's one in 10 million. So it's a real interesting question. They're kibbutzim there, they're moshavim. Yes, and a lot of religious Jews are in that area. A lot of Jews who care. I mean, if Jews don't care about Shabbos, you can come up with all the patentum in the world, all the patents in the world. It's not going to mean anything. But where people care, they want help. So Tzomet came up with a Jeep that works with a Grumma switch. And that's the Jeeps they use in that area patrolling on Shabbos. That there's no Isidioraita whatsoever. Where they say, look, when the last time we had a problem was a year ago, 18 months ago. I have grandchildren when Netzach Yehuda they were involved once in a Shabbos where they came across from Jordan. They had to go into battle gear, etc. But it's rare. It's not down south. It's not up north. So the American, the Israeli army, we have these problems. But there, this is an army that runs al pi halacha. Again, it all depends on the percentage of soldiers. I've said this all the time. I don't want to redo my lectures, but all of you know that I always give Ben-Gurion credit because there was a tremendous machloket back in 48 to have one army or two armies. The Palmach functioned with two armies. Are you aware of that? I yet knew Avram Melamed. He sought me out. I was a young guy teaching, and he was in Chinuch. He was a colonel. He ran the religious division of the Palmach, and he showed me. Remember, I told you years ago already. I told you he showed me on Rehov Herzog where Rav Shlomo Gorenchik, later Rav Shlomo Gorin, where he was a sharpshooter and where his post was. He showed me the window where he was stationed. And they had, you religious, you cared. You weren't religious, you went into the regular Palmach. And in Petach Tikva, B'nai Brak, Tel Aviv, there were Machlaka Hadatit, Chativa Hadatit. But now when you have the Israeli army, what do? Do you have one army or two armies? And Ben-Gurion made the famous speech, I believe it was in 49, during the respite from the fighting, when the Knesset already passed a lot of laws. So one of the most famous laws they passed was creating Tzva Hagana Yisrael, no more Lechi, no longer Eitzel. Everyone had to throw their arms in and form one army. And in Ben-Gurion's speech, he said, "We will not have Chagodah, the belt that a soldier gets. There'll be room for bullets, and there'll be room for a gun, and there'll be room for a grenade. And for those who request it, there'll be room for tefillin." That was, and that opened the Pandora's box. That according to law, the army has to be kosher, and there can be no chilul Shabbos. In other words, if it's not batash, if it's not bitachon shoteif, you're not allowed to train, there's not allowed to be chilul Shabbos. We're going to come to that here in this Shiva 2 in a minute, you'll see, in a few minutes. And but these laws, Vic, are only as good as if you have 200 soldiers in a base, and only two keep kosher, they're finished. They're going to have to eat out of cans. But if you have out of 250, 60, then it's a different story. You follow? So the laws are beautiful. The enforcement is the people on the ground. Today, obviously, it's a lot better because the entire population has shifted here. So here you see Rav Schechter leading services. I assume that's who he's referring to. It's Buchenwald. If anyone can ask Rabbi J.J. Schechter, unfortunately, his father is gone. His father, a wonderful, wonderful Jew. I knew his father quite well. You have to differentiate between the two Rabbi Heschel Schechters. I always refer to one as the elder and one as junior. You follow? Because people constantly can be confused. It's the exact same names, basically. So if anyone would ask Rabbi J.J., what did his father Taka do on Shabbos, the Jeep, the war, the situation? But I can understand very well that there was a heta, that this was worked out with the Jewish Welfare Board, that they arranged with the army that every chaplain, Jewish chaplain, can have a number of assistants. One of them can be Jewish, like a gabbai, and one of them has to be non-Jewish to aid the rabbi on Shabbat, on Yantif, etc. All right, now look at it from the point of view of Reb Menashe Klein. Here is a Jew who's brought up in a world where everyone has a beard and chayas and black clothes. You're brought up in Gula Meir Sharim, parts of Borough Park, the Square of Rebbe just came back from a trip where was he, abroad or something, and I saw movies on Yeshiva World News, how they're greeting him, thousands, everyone looking the same in black. What? Square Chassidus? Squares? What do they call it? Square Town? New Square? New Square, I think, is the name, right? New Square.
New Square.
New Square, right? And greeting him. Someone from that neighborhood, from that era, and you take a look, imagine you're going to, the Rabbi Heschel Schechter comes in, clean shaven, army uniform. A Jeep pulls out on Leil Shabbat Kodesh. You understand? This has left a deep impression on him. And he says, when once you get involved, Hutra HaRetzua. What does Hutra HaRetzua mean? Very simple. It's the open Gemara. Kivin Shasadam Avayrubin Nishnes. If you repeat the sin, Hutrilo. So the Gemara says, Hutrilo. Once you did psychological, a person, all right, he always did it this way. I remember growing up, everyone ripped toilet paper on Shabbos. Then people suddenly said, you're not allowed to rip toilet paper, you can prepare it in advance. The people looked at you, what are you, I don't want to use the word chnuk, what are you, a chnuk? That's the way they looked at you. What are you, a fanatic? You understand? Hutrilo. The Gemara is so clever. The Gemara is absolutely right. When someone gets used to eating gelatin, let's say, and he's using hard cheese, now you have so many different cheeses available that are kosher. But Hutrilo, why do I have to be machmir? All my years we were men. There's a lot to be said for this. But this is why you can understand Rav Menashe Klai. When he pokes fun at RCA, Erev Rav, here, 1 minute later he's telling you, here was this rabbi riding and driving away on Shabbat. All right, then I'm positive. It's not Rabbi Schechter who drove. It's not a Jewish assistant. It has to be a non-Jew who was attached, who was put next to the rabbi. And your job is to be the Shabbos guy. As Elvis Presley used to boast, there's now a player I saw in the weekend papers, the king is still alive. As Elvis Presley used to boast, he used to be a Shabbos guy in New Orleans. And as Ara Kefet showed in class, we now found out so many years later, Elvis Presley was forbidden to be a Shabbos guy because he himself was Jewish. You follow? Go and dream that Elvis Presley, the king, was Jewish. It turns out his mother's mother, they went to the cemetery. There's a mug and David on her grave. And Jewish means her mother was Jewish, means Elvis Presley was Jewish. All right, it would stop with him. But this is the job, and people boast until today they were Shabbos guy. I think the Colin Powell told people how he used to get challah on Shabbos. And I can tell you, I told you the story with Russia when we sent for the holidays. We used to send not people in their 40s and 50s who could teach Gemara, but we used to send college kids, post college, but young kids. What was the purpose? That they should go to the surviving shuls in the Soviet Union and daven for the Yomid. And the idea was to show that there's still Jews in the world, that the Soviet Jewish masses, we're talking the 70s, the 80s, shouldn't think Judaism, as the communists have taught them, that Judaism came to an end and all you have now is the great Russian Empire and we're Soviets and no longer Jews, etc. So we used to send kids. I told you, we sent this as Minsk. I had some bad experiences in Minsk myself with my wife, but that's a different story. But in Minsk, so these two hotshots go to the shul. There's one shul. In every city, there was one shul. They used to call it a functioning synagogue, a functioning church. One church, one shul. And the KGB agents were there. They knew what was going on, but that was like a safety valve for those babushkas that wanted to go pray to God. So these kids didn't turn off the lights. So they come home and they can't fall asleep. The lights are on. It's Shabbat. And they don't know what to do. I can sleep with the lights on, but these kids couldn't. Most people can't. So there's on every floor a floor lady. Remember what you heard about the Soviet Union? Her job there is to keep see what's going on with the tourists. Anything strange, she reports right away to the KGB. So they went over to the floor lady, and they're trying to talk with her. And the floor lady knows Russian. She's not a genius. She's probably not even a high school graduate. And these kids don't know Russian. And finally, the kid says, Shabbos. The floor lady jumps up, Shabbos! And she runs to the room and opens. Immediately, she knew to turn off the lights. And she told them, they made out from a conversation, Zizkevena Shabbaskoya for her neighbors. You follow? So this is what I would melamed zchut, but I would like someone to check with Rabbi J.J. Schechter if he can confirm that my interpretation is correct. All right, then he goes one step further, and he quotes the Gemara from a Ruvim. This is the Gemara Moshe that I, the Rambam that I photographed on Friday, a Ruvim Daf Yud Zayin. And the Gemara in the Ruvim is talking about four different kulot that exist in an army camp. In other words, Chazal understood that at times when you go to war, you can't observe like in normal circumstances. You're in a battlefield, you're in an encampment, you're far from civilization. And the Gemara lists that. Now, I want to quote the Rambam. Do you want to know what quote the Rambam? Because he defines it very beautifully. Hilchat Melachim u'milchamot Perek Vav Halacha Yud Gimel V'abad varim pitru b'machaneh Ochlim demai peturim meirechitzat yadayim batchila u'meviyin kol mini etzim mikol makom va'afilu matzan tlushin v'yaveishim ein makpidim al kach b'machaneh v'chein p'turim me'laro v'yruvet chatzerot b'machaneh ele metaltelin me'ochel le'ol me'sukah le'sukah v'hu she'yakifu kol ha'machaneh mi'chitza g'vo'ha asarat fachim k'dei she'tiyeh reshut hayachid. And the Rambam here defines four different areas that the Gemara says you can be mekil. Now look at what these areas are. You can eat demai. What's demai? When you're misupak, whether they took off Trumat and Maisra. In Israel, I always say a vort that when the food finally reaches you, it's probably been separated two, three, or four times. Because if it grows up in a religious settlement, then a good deal of the farming is religious, they take off from the maishret. Then they give it to Tanuva, Tanuva takes off. Then they wind up in the stores and the mashgiach comes by and takes off. And then, depending where you're eating, the balabas, the balabaster takes off because she doesn't trust anyone. So it's an interesting shaila. You wind up with a bal tashchet. You're taking away so much. All right, but Baruch Hashem. But the mai is an isa d'oraita, an isa d'rabbanan. It's only an isa d'rabbanan. Certainly, bizman hazeh, it's an isa d'rabbanan. That's no question about it, because there's no chiyuv trumat in Ma'israel. At the time the Gemara was written already, we were in Golis. But Chazal said this, d'rabbanan, in a battlefield, if you have food, you're thankful you have food, eat it. Rechitzat yadayim latchila, nu rechitzat yadayim. In the Gemara we have latchila, we have after the meal, it's only the Rabbanan. But only before you eat, not after you eat. Why not after you eat? Because after you eat, you look in the Radban says this, after you eat, it's sakonet nefashet. They were worried for salt, mesodom, and it could cause harm to your eyes. You rub your face, rub your eyes. This is why the Litvakin, it's a Ramah, we're not makpid on the, because you say there's no mesodom anymore. But it's common sense. You got to see what you ate, how you ate. Einach inam, I would say if a person put his hands into vinegar with pickles and whatnot, good to wash your hand after the meal, not just before the meal. But here too, we are mekil adin derabbanan. And here I can tell you in parentheses, for your own edification, your own knowledge, this is how the Lubavitcher Rebbe became very famous. Anyone know what I'm talking about? The Lubavitcher Rebbe is known throughout the Jewish world. Even my relatives, and remember, my family left in America is totally assimilated today. Don't fool yourself. Family in America since 1900. I told you, my brother's in touch with many members. He has time. A doctor turned 70. He can't operate anymore, so he has time on his hands. So he's in touch with many members of the family, and we have cousins, must be second cousins already. They decided not to have children. I mean, some are living married to Goyim, some are married to Jews. Not to have children. It's a terrible world. Why bring children into the world? All right. If you think like that, there's no Jewish people tomorrow, which they couldn't care less, and there's no people in general tomorrow if we all stop having children. Or the Chinese will take over the world. Could you imagine? The Western world doesn't reproduce, and the China's reproducing, you know that, and you know how powerful they are today. So, but everyone knows the name of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. It's amazing. Even my relatives would tell me, yes, they went into a synagogue, Lubavitch, Yosh Hashana, Yom Kippur. Wow. How did the Rebbe become famous? Most non-religious Jews never heard of the Sachmuruv, never heard of the Square Rebbe, never heard of the Gera Rebbe, who's now in Borough Park and Manhattan, if you know what's going on there. Thousands upon thousands were at they put up a tent, what went on in Borough Park, and had bad weather today, rain, snow in New York. But the Rebbe's there for not good reasons. His wife is evidently quite ill. She's in a hospital in Manhattan. They don't give details, but I can imagine what it is. Okay. Lubavitcher Rebbe, they heard of. So the story is very simple. In Commentary magazine in the early 50s, when the Rebbe first became Rebbe, there was a story documented in the Commentary magazine that goes against everything I've just told you, the Gemara. And the story is very simple, that a kid in Brooklyn was drafted into the American Army. What war was being fought in the 50s? The Korean War. And he was very worried because it was a dangerous place to be. The Americans were being killed. And communism, frightening. So his friends told him, you know, it's a typical American kid. His friends told him, look, oh, there's a great rabbi in Brooklyn. Go to him for a blessing. And he went to the Lubavitcher. Then it was very easy to get to Lubavitch, to meet the Rebbe. You know, it wasn't what happens later. There were hundreds of chassidim, but not yet tens of thousands. And the Rebbe gives him a bracha, and the Rebbe tells him, and no matter what you do in the army, one Jewish ceremony I want you to be careful with, to wash your hands in the Tilat Yadayim whenever you have bread. And the Rebbe showed him what to do. I mean, the kid didn't know much, but the Rebbe told him. And you know, the fact you go to a Rebbe, you come to Rakefet, you're not going to be impressed. He looks like anyone else sitting around. Who the heck is he? But you come to a Rebbe, the Lubavitcher, and the way he's dressed, his beard, his hat, his eyes. So the kid is now in the army, and they bring food, they bring bread, and he doesn't know what to do. There's no water nearby. So he said, look, the Rebbe didn't mean I should kill myself. What can I do? There's no water. But he said, no. I know where there's water. I have to walk a quarter of an hour. But let me do what the Rebbe said. And he said to the people in his unit, look, I'll be back. I just want to wash. It's a ritual. A great rabbi told me. And, you know, in a foxhole, they're no atheists. All the people there, including the Gentiles, said, fine, go do what the great rabbi told you. Anyway, the guy goes and washes, and he comes back, and where he was, no one has left a missile hit. If they had missiles, then whatever. A shell exploded and killed four or five of his colleagues. He's the only one left. This story was documented, and it went into commentary, and it put the Rebbe on the American scene. People read commentary. This is not just an Orthodox publication for Young Israel or Jewish Life for the OU. And here it's interesting that the Rebbe Dafka said something to him, and it could have been Mekil. And here the Rebbe told him, be medaktek, and that diktuk saved his life. So it's an interesting sideshow on this Gemara. Now, then, Mevim Komani Yetzim Mekol Kam. Nu Moshe, what's that about? The Geneva, Gezela. How are you a Geneva, actually? Not Gezela. Geneva. How are you allowed to? I remember when we were in Lebanon in 82. So I remember that everyone was eating cherries. They never saw cherries before in Israel. And I remember cautioning them, don't eat too much. It's going to affect your stomach. Some listened, some didn't. But then you had to be careful. Are you allowed? No, absolutely. It's goyim, all right? There would be a din of geneva. Could be it's only a derabbanan. Could be only mitzat chilul Hashem. Could be you'll say less than shava pruta. You can come up, but at a time of war, hefka beitin hefka, and you have a right to eat. You don't have to be medatek. Even if, look at the words of the Rambam, it's based upon the Gemara, even if you see that they dried them, they put it aside, that it belongs to someone. But nevertheless, it's a time of war, you're allowed. And then, of course, the whole question of Eruv, which is one of the biggest problems you will ever have. Remember my grandson calling me from inside Gaza in the war three and a half years ago, and this grandson was later injured in this war, and I had other grandsons lucky to be alive, one after another, front line, first troops in, and, you know, houses were booby-trapped. You don't know what you go through in a war. It's a low pashut, particularly when you fight in a built-up area. This is what drove America out of Vietnam. And here's a built-up area. You're in Gaza. And he calls me about food being brought in on Shabbos. There's no Erev. I said, I'm positive that the army has dealt with this problem. Tell your commander, and they were all from people, to contact the Rav Tzvayi and see what he says, but it would appear to me it's pikuach nefesh, you have to eat, you have to continue fighting. And the first thing they do when they come to a new area and it's not bullets flying around you, they build an Erev. And the army has equipment, I don't know if you've seen it, that you can put up an Erev within a few minutes. If it's a very big area, so the Erev can be put up within a half hour. You can surround the whole area with a wire, with poles, everything kedat v'kedin. They're prepared for it. But there can be times where you don't have time, where you're in battle, when you're moving forward, obviously, and you're not going to be able to deal with it properly. And right near the Gaza front, there are, for instance, Kibbutz Sad. There are a few religious settlements there. Not a few, a lot of religious Jews. And a ton of food was available, but you had to get it to the soldiers on Shabbat. So here you see that an Erev you have to have in a machane tzva'i, an Erev ten tfachim high. But the Erev chatzera, the shituf that we do every Erev Yom Kippur, Erev Pesach, you take a matzah, and it, the Chachmei Ha'ir, or the Rav Tzvayi, or the Moetza HaDatit, make an Erev Chatzerot that enables us already to carry within the surrounding wire, which turned it into Rishut HaYachet. That too is it in the Rabbanan, once it's a Rishut HaYachet. So there too, the Chachamim would make kill. So Rav Menashe Klein says right on, I hold this to be a fabulous comment, he says, don't quote the Gemara in a rhythm to me. You can only be makil what the chachamim were makil. What would they makil? In these four areas. And in all four areas, basically, it was a derabbanan. But chas v'chalila, to quote this Gemara, to be matir endless chilul Shabbos latchila in the army, the oraita. Why do I mean the oraita? It's the simplest thing. Imagine in the army, my kid brother was in communications. Knew everyone is writing. Everything you get has to be written. He was fortunate that he was in Hawaii and he wore a kippah in the army, and the Afro-Americans actually protected him. He would never let me use any other word than Afro-American. He said to me, Ani, you don't know how good they were to me. And he told me, hillbillies from Louisiana, Mississippi, they never saw a Jew before. They make a comment to him, then out of ignorance, something, you know, an off-color comment, anti-Semitic, and this tall Afro-American, 6'7", would come. One more word to Stevie, and you're dead. You understand? Oh, boy. But they helped him out. Never had to work on Shabbos, never on Yontif. They helped him out. But you're talking Chilul Shabbos, the Oraita. What about shooting a gun? What about getting a tank into action? What about getting the tank ready? All the malacha that has to go into a tank, that has to go in cleaning a gun. You have no idea how many little pulat are involved. When you check it out, you can find many Isurim D'Oraita. So, this is clear. You cannot volunteer. Shabbat, D'Oraita, don't compare it to the Gemara in Eruvin. Ma inyan shmitah etzel har Sinai. And I have a feeling, knowing response literature, how does he get involved in this? Because evidently Rabbi Sam Turk, who was not an Amoritz, was a first-rate Talmud Chacham, he evidently said, well, people are quoting to me the Gemara in Eruvin. That we can make Hilzayim. You don't have to be machmir. Arba devarim pitru chazal b'machaneh. Yeah, look at it, analyze it. Nothing to do with dinim d'oraita. Then, in the next column, he touches upon probably the biggest halachic problem we have in the army. Even today. Go into the Naval Reserves. Go in the army. Whatever you're doing is bikuach nefesh. See, this certainly, what he raises here, would certainly apply to Tzva Hagana Yisrael. Now, what does it mean, bikuach nefesh? On the battlefield? Of course, bikuach nefesh. Habola hargecha hashken v'harkom. When I crossed the border in 82, every chayal going across the border into Lebanon had to have his gun loaded with bullets. That was the what would you call that? The takanon, the tekken, the tzav, the hora'ah. Every chayal, you're in a battlefield. You don't know who's going to come and shoot at you. And every chayal. No. What do? When you're training, is that pikuach nefesh? When you're training, think for a minute. If every training base in the army, I can remember it like yesterday, I'm in basic training, big sign up. Kasher b'tiranut, kal b'krav. Kasher b'emunim, kal b'krav. Hard. Emunim, how do you translate that? Practice, training, tiranut, kal bikrav. In battle it'll be easy. So wait a minute, that's bikuach nefesh too. You gotta know how to shoot. You have to know, you have to know how to get the tank ready. You have to know how to get your gun ready. You have to oil, you have to clean. There's so much involved, and you have to take apart part of the tank and put it together again. No? You can make a case that's all pikuach nefesh. And Rav Menashe Klein says, chas v'chalila, I can understand on the battlefield, if you don't shoot, you'll be dead. But to get it ready, there's 6 other days during the week. It is a very delicate question. And ein hachinami, endless tshuva have been written, and all these tshuva try to deal with what you can do to prepare the equipment on Shabbos, and what you must do before Shabbos. Endless tshuva, because there's certain things that you can't do before you're going, the tank is ready to roll. Then you can do what you have to do. Other things you can taka do. And I remember in basic training, we had to clean our guns Friday afternoon to have it ready in case any emergency would come up in Shabbos. God shall help and God should have mercy if they depended upon us in basic training to do something with an emergency. But sometimes you have no choice. The power and the tragedy and the tension of the moment, you can do things beyond your comprehension. But this is a very delicate question. What do you call batash? Where do you draw the line? If you take pikuach nefesh, yes, the minute you join the army, you're training, you're learning, because you may be in battle. There's maybe, maybe, maybe. This problem carries over to another aspect of military reality in the state of Israel. Does anyone know what I'm about to say? You take, well, we talk army, battle. Tell me, what goes on underground here? Don't talk about it too much. You only hear about it. Last week, everyone was walking with their head high in the sky. The great United States government is purchasing the anti-missile system of the state of Israel. It is very rare that America is going to buy weapons from elsewhere. It's hundreds of millions of dollars, and of course it's from Rafael. I can tell you, Rafael, tell you more. One of my grandsons is getting a PhD from the Technion in this very area, aeronautical engineering. So he's a very brilliant kid. Halavai, or my grandchildren, would devote themselves to teaching Torah, but there's a big lamdan and a tzaddik and all that goes with it. And his wife, mashahu, mashahu. But all right, I guess this is a great mitzvah. All my kids tell me, who can be like you, Sabu, that we want to make a living, quote unquote. Because you know, it's true, in the 70s and 80s, literally, we didn't have money for food the fourth Shabbat of the month. Nothing to be ashamed of, but a reality. It was a whole black economy, and I was getting one check from the government of Israel and one check from the Jewish agency. So you can't accuse me of not working hard, but I was on the books. So the government of Israel was a partner with me for at least 50%. In Malasad, I got to give the Likud credit. They straightened out the economy here. It's infinite, Chaim. It's infinitely better than when I came in Aliyah before you were born. Got the message? Don't think you're set today. Minimal, minimal sacrifice, if at all, compared to Denver. But those days, not easy, not easy, not easy at all. And where was I? I lost myself already. I started to wonder, what was I trying to... Oh, so my grandson is getting a PhD, and I have to tell you, he's involved. He developed something that has tremendous implications for every army in the world. So Mark and I have visited him a number of times in the Technion, and he's, you know, it's an area secluded. Certain people can't come there, our cousins, if you understand what I'm saying. So the professor, world famous in his field, you know, was impressed with his grandparents, came in Aliyah 69, did something here. Grandfather worked, did army, worked for the Mossad, his grandparents. So they decided to honor us, and they put on a display of what my grandson has accomplished. We first drew a video, and then we saw the real life display. Cost money to do, but they wanted to honor the grandparents, which I appreciate. When it was all over, I asked the professor, tell me, when this becomes practical, that it can be reproduced, and it's almost at that stage now. My grandson just spoke to Raphael, the whole presentation, got pictures of it. Who's going to make the money? Every army in the world is going to be interested in this new development. We're talking billions of dollars. So the professor says to me, you asked, Shalta HaShaylah HaNechona. He said, Ani Yechol Lagid Lecha, HaNechet Shelcha Lo Yekabel Mizeh Grush. Ani Lo Akabel Grush. Ulai HaTechnion Yekabel Mei HaMemshala, Avol Raphael, Heim Yehenu. You follow me? The Israeli arms? And now I want to ask you a question. Fine, so you're aware there's an Israeli arms industry here. Anyone who's in that field can find employment today, not just tomorrow. They need more and more people. You see what's going on. Selling America, it's beyond words, but it has to be produced. All right. Tell me, we're at war. We're firing every hour 1,000 missiles. We need more. We need more. We need more. can you produce the missiles on Shabbat? Pikuach nefesh. Interesting question, though. What do you say? I want to tell you, they've been heterim around the clock. Six-day war. Yom Kippur war goes without saying. I can tell you I knew from Jews who worked around the clock on Shabbos 7:24 to get more ammunition, more ammunition, more ammunition to the front lines. So I have to tell you, this point of Rav Menashe Klein, extremely fascinating. Where do you draw the line? Pikuach nefesh? Where does it begin? Where does it end? How far back can you say this is pikuach nefesh? Rafi, in the army, did you ever deal with this problem?
I had to bring my phone around with me on Shabbat.
Right. So on Shmirah, you had to have a phone. You had to have your gun with you, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Preparing the gun. What happens if you forgot to prepare it? You follow one shaila after another. Tanks going into battle. How much do you need? How much can you prepare? What's going to happen? What do you know? Where do you draw the line? And remember, the Brisker Rav said, one millionth. That would be an answer the Rav would give. It's a Brisker answer. Okay. Let me... Very interesting. I got to tell you, Rav Menashe Klein, I don't know what he would say with the Israeli army, because as a survivor who went through the hell that he went through, I can tell you, I heard from Rashi Yeshiva, Chassidic Rebbeim, with all their non-Zionist feeling, when it comes to the army, they're very proud. They're already, deep down, they're Zionists. Let me tell you, I know it from my own experience, and I know it, tell you, conversations I had with Gedolei Gedolei Yisrael. Don't know if Menashe Klein would write this off in the Israeli army, but in the American army, where do you draw the line? And the Chalul Shabbos. Okay. Now there's one other point. Moshe, have you ever spoken to a chaplain from the American army?
Very briefly.
You know the basic rule? You are a Jewish chaplain, number one. Number two, you are a religious chaplain available for anyone in the army, regardless of race, creed, or national origins. You know what I'm saying? Very simple. You read this in the memoir literature, but this is halacha lemaisa. There's a Catholic chaplain on base with the Jewish chaplain and the Protestant chaplain. And the Catholic chaplain, his mother's dying. He had to go back to be at her deathbed. The army sends him, you know, gives him a furlough. A Catholic soldier is very ill. He wants to see a chaplain. The only one available that day is the Jewish chaplain. Chaim, are you aware of this? The Jewish chaplain now becomes a non-denominational chaplain. We're not just talking Reform Conservative. We're talking Protestant. We're talking Catholic. Talking Mohammedan, if need be. Muslim. Aha. Now, Rav Menashe Klein, imagine he's dealing with this. You see, he's down to earth. He knows what's going on. He says, what, you want to be a chaplain in the American army? He says, I've heard ha chaplain Belaz nosei lechofesh o le'ezes sibay nenuwa mekomo oz hasheni tzarich lasot havodah shelo. And if this is the case, you can have a rabbi standing next to a non-Jew saying vidui with him on his deathbed. And I heard this from chaplains who did it, Jewish chaplains, from boys. I wish Rabbi Rubin were here. He should have a foolish shleima. We miss him. Rabbi Rubin is my student. 20 years he sat in this room. So, he was a chaplain. Yitzchak, did you ever have this situation? And the Sevidi with a guy, and then he goes further. And Chas v'Chalila, he may have to listen to this guy saying or reading from his prayer book. You'll have to read to him, and you get involved with the Trinity. Jesus, the Father, the Son, the Holy Ghost. No? This now is the whole question. Is this Avodah Zarah? Shituf. The Rishonim all discuss it. All right, it could be for a guy. You don't have to... If he's an Avodah Zarah, this is terrible. Could be for a Gentile. Shituf is not pure Avodah Zarah. But for a Jew, it certainly is. And you're saying to him these words, and he says... Anyone who has any Yirat Shemayim, no Yirat Hashem, no Geyab Levavo, Yirchak Mehem. He'll run away from anything like this. How can you be a chaplain? And this is Rav Menashe Klein. He is hitting hard. He is making his case clear. And he says, I understand. It's not so simple. We live among the Gentiles. And there is a problem that we don't want the Gentiles to say to us, Meraglim atem. You're spies. You're not part of the country. You don't serve the country. You have no respect for the country. And if that's the case, they will enable and enact laws against the Jews, and this could very well be a question of pikuach nefesh. But why should you force yourself into it? It's one thing to be drafted, it's another to volunteer. And then he goes into the whole question of onis. You're going to take this approach. No, take it one step further. And by the way, I have to tell you that this shows up in rabbinic literature 100 years ago. I'll show you in a second how, why. If you're going to take this approach, all Chilul Shabbos can become permissible. He discusses it here. It's the busiest day of the business week. Saturday, I don't know today, but when I was growing up, there's no question. Saturday was a very busy day. Stores were closed Sunday. You only worked half a day on Saturday. A person says very clearly, I can't make a living. I'll starve. I'm an ones. I wish I didn't have to be Machal Shabbos. There's no choice. Remember what I told you? And remember Rabbi Lamb was here? He certified it. When we were growing up, every shul shtibble in the Bronx had a 6:30 minyan Shabbos morning, 6 o'clock, 6:30, filled with daveners. Finished at 8:15, made kiddush, went home, changed their clothes, and went to work. And this shows up in responsa literature. Are these Jews still kosher Jews? Are they reliable Adam? What do you do if you see a get, if you see a ketuvah from years and years ago? And who signed on it? Jews who work on Shabbat. What do you do with their wine? This question. Can you count them for a minion? Could they be officers in Young Israel? Remember Young Israel? One of their basic laws that caused the revolution in America. You cannot be an officer in a Young Israel unless you're a Shomer Shabbos. And this question goes on and on. Ones. It's the famous question Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik dealt with Rabbi Gorelick. a Shulai, it was, I believe, in New England. It's written up in the volume that we'll quote from Natty Helfgott, where he puts the Rav's correspondence together. And his shul inherited a business. They would be on Fifth Avenue, never have to worry about money. Person died, willed the business to the shul. And the whole question, this business ran on Shabbos. Can a shul have a business that runs on Shabbos? All right, you can make a shtamachir or sell it to Goyim. But again, ones, poor shul, money. What'll be left of Shabbos? Rabbi Soloveitchik Asa. In Germany, there were many businesses where they had taka, a contract with a non-Jew. In America, the Rabbanim sensed right away, if we'll permit that, there won't be a Shemesh Shabbos store in the world. Everything will be run on Shabbos. Borough Park, until the 1950s, was like any other place in New York. 13th Avenue, every last store was open on Shabbos. Hard to conceive of today, though. But I'm telling you facts. My mother's second husband, Reb Moshe Appelbach, Zichrono Levracha, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, he was president of the Shomer Shabbos Society in Borough Park. He and Rabbi Felder, Zichrono Levracha, used to go. Moshe told me, he was a lawyer, he was born in America, from 100%, one son graduated college with me, one son got smicha with me. Go and dream, he would marry my mother, had a very beautiful second marriage, on to 17, 18 years. And he told me that he would go on Shabbos, Erev Shabbos, from store to store, pleading with the people not to open on Shabbos. But you see, how far does onus go? If you take the concept of onus, there'll be nothing left of Yiddishkeit. I have to eat. There's no kosher food available. Right or wrong? People are traveling. What went on in my youth, the stories I heard of from Jews traveling today, thank God, due to the OU and international kashrut, it's a lot easier and better. But you can take this endlessly, and Rabbi Nasha Klein, black and white, one reason after another. Don't quote the Gemara, don't tell me about Machligim Besmina, don't tell me about 3 days before. Look at the greater picture. What will be left of Shabbos? How do you bring yourself into a situation where Chilul Shabbos will become the norm, total, ongoing? And he raises very fascinating questions here. The whole question of preparing for war. Where do you draw the line? Do you know that before the Six-Day War, where they were very frightened about the Jordanian tanks coming into Jerusalem, yeshiva boys and Beis Yaakov girls worked around the clock digging ditches so that the tanks would be stopped by the ditches and digging them on Shabbos as well. And we have pictures. And this little story I just told you has tremendous implication for the second greatest miracle in modern times. Anyone know what I'm about to say? Ah, my dear students, do not be ignorant, be wise. I'll tell you what I'm talking about. What's the second greatest miracle? The state of Israel, that we survive. What's going on here today? Gentlemen, when Yom HaTzmut comes, you got to say Hallel with tremendous kavana, because we survive, our leaders, our politicians, our newspapers, and our human beings. A scandal like this, I've never seen. It's like a movie before our eyes. Sex, politics, money, law. You can't get any better. The papers are having a field day. You listen to the radio, they're analyzing with the Rashi, with the Tosfos, with the Rashba, with the Ritba. Oh my gosh, what's going on? And we survive! Baruch Hashem. Second miracle, the Jewish people of Russia came back to their peoplehood, to their nation. So I've told the story many times. If I've told you, you can stop me. But when I come into my house, I used to begin a lecture in the army. You know, in the army, you got to remember, I have an American accent. But you got to catch them. If you catch them, they're going to fall forward and kiss your hand afterwards. The svadim rush forward and it's embarrassing, but you have to stick out your hand and they kiss it. So I begin every lecture, when I come into my house, when I come home today, I'm going to kiss the mezuzah, my wife, and my television screen. All right? Atem mebinim lama ha-mezuzah. Atem gam mebinim lama ha-isha. Tzuchim lahutir, lechabed, lahatir. Aval lama ha-masach shel ha-televizia, ma yesh bezeh? I'll tell you why. And this was told to me by many, many Russians, including prisoners of Zion. In Russia, it was a very poor country. We didn't realize that growing up in America. We heard of Sputnik, we were frightened stiff, but it was a very poor country with Potemkin's village, if you know what I'm talking about. But everyone had a colored television. The government, where you worked, you would get a loan, buy the television for 100 ruble, paying back a ruble a month. Why did they encourage you to have a television? Propaganda. I can tell you, Malta and I saw the Russian television, we didn't need any translation of the Russian, which show you the commissar and the head of the army, and had so many medals when he leaned over, I wondered how he ever was going to lean back, how he didn't fall down. And they showed you the worker of the day and the heroic Soviet mother who has 10 children. You have no idea of propaganda. So before the Six-Day War, they were shown the movies of the world, what's going on, how they're going to wipe Israel off the map. And they would show the Arabs boasting. The book later was written, it was a funny thing happened to me on the way to Tel Aviv by Abdul Nasser. And they're boasting on what's going to happen in the UN, and Russians are laughing. And they would show propaganda movies of what's going on in Israel, that the teenagers have to work digging the ground. How is that going to help the power of all the tanks and the might and the planes that Russia has given the Arab countries? And the Russian Jews looking at the television, they didn't pay attention, they said. They didn't pay attention to the commentary. They saw these boys and girls digging the trenches, and they said, these are our cousins. These are our relatives. These are our people. It woke them up. So you have to kiss the television occasionally. It played a great role. And these are the miracles. Can't let the assimilation totally overwhelm us and the onus totally overwhelm us. And sometimes you have to take a Gemara and understand it a little deeper. And Reb Menashe Klein can't be dismissed. He has a very negative attitude, obviously. And he ends off at the end of the second tshuva that we're absolutely right, and you're absolutely right, and the rabbinical Alliance is absolutely right in condemning the RCA. Why did they have to make that protest? This way, if the government would say, how come no Jews showed up, no Jews volunteered? So we had an answer, it was on Shabbos. But now you're demanding they change it to another day of the week? What are you doing? You're going to take Jews and turn them in to Mechalel Shabbos on a permanent basis. But then he ends off the tshuva. Maybe I have to be Melamed Zchut in the RCA. And Oz Yuchlu L'Taretz, that why did they make this announcement? So that if the government would complain, where are the Jews? The Jews didn't sign up. This is why they made the announcement. They couldn't sign up because it was Shabbos. And Im Yavoach Akach Betanel Zui Mishalu Lama Lo Rashmu Bebnei Yisrael. This is their answer. And then he ends off these two important shuvot. Ukishen Shedanti Lekaf Skut. Kein Yaduni Yotim Mina Shamayim Lekaf Skut. Liolam Va End. God should be Malamet Skut Alai. ובזה הנני ידידו אז המחבדו מוקירו כערכו בברכת התורה כנפש מנשה הקטן. Okay, so here we've spent, what is it, 4 weeks already on the tshuvot of Rav Menashe Klein, Naval Reserves, Chaplaincy, United States Army, all the sources, halacha lemaisa, some of the implications affect us in Israel, some of the issues he raised. But remember, there's a wedge between the Rabbinical Alliance and the RCA. We'll come back to that in the Monday class. Excuse me. Let us move on. Chaim, Reb David Tzvi Hoffman doesn't go for nothing. $36,000 linked to the shekel on the IOU list to the Rebbe. You bought it? You don't know what I'm talking about. The Gemara says, Asher the Megan Muggin Shabi, a doctor who heals for nothing is worth nothing. I'm taking you into the world of Reb David Tzvi Hoffman. I'm going to give you an honest analysis. Can't go for nothing. 36 grand IOU list, the Rebbe never collects, but you got to feel that it's worth it. A deal? Still in the, a deal, thank God. Okay. I know his father, I know his mother, so he better deal properly. All right. Gentlemen, this question came up in Germany as well. And here you have to understand, this is very fascinating. If those of you in my Monday class know, I mentioned this volume in the Monday class, and Charlie Hexter, who's a Yekka going back generations, looked into the volume. It's a fabulous volume. It's a doctorate on Diukno Shaleida, a portrait of the religious, social, economic atmosphere of the German Orthodox community before World War I, the turn of the last century. What's amazing is how similar it is to what happened in the United States with young Israel, English-speaking Orthodoxy, what later becomes Yeshiva University. Very, very similar. Now, without going into all the details of German Orthodoxy that I lectured on many, many decades ago, I do want to say a few words about Reb David Tzvi Hoffman, who's the author of the Tshuvot on this issue. Reb David Tzvi Hoffman, his years 1843 to 1921. I have to tell you that the Wikipedia article on Reb David Tzvi Hoffman, whoever wrote it, it is excellent. It's better than what you have in the Judaica, a real understanding of Reb David Tzvi Hoffman. First of all, a few details about his life. He was born in Hungary, attended Hungarian yeshivat. He then studied philosophy, history, Oriental languages in Vienna and Berlin. Did a PhD in addition to his smicha. He taught at first in Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch's high school Torum Derech Eretz in Frankfurt, and then was called to Berlin to become the teacher of Talmud and codes at the Berlin Rabbinical Seminary. And after Rabbi Israel Hilde Simon died in 1899, for the next 22 years until his death, he was the rector of the rabbinic seminary, popularly called Hildesheimers. In other words, it has a technical name. The rabbinical seminary for Orthodox students, rabbinical seminar for das orthodoxische Judentum. But everyone calls it Hildesheimer. Hildesheimer was the founder. Now you have to know that there, as someone said, when Rabbi Hirsch and Rabbi Hildesheimer met each other on the street, they both crossed the different sides of the street. I was asked whether it's true. I said, I don't know what's true or not, because Rabbi Hirsch was in Frankfurt and Rabbi Hildesheimer was in Berlin. But allegorically speaking, it relates something. And what does it relate? So, Moshe, you got to ask a simple question. These were two great rabbis, two great rabbanim, who recreated what's called neo-orthodoxy in Germany when it entirely disappeared, when it went entirely reform. Germany was the start of all the acculturation and all the reform and all the enlightenment. And Germany is where Hitler, the very place where it began, is where Hitler wanted to end the Jewish world and succeeded to one-third at least, and even more, the Litvishi Yeshiva, etc. So what was this great difference between them? And here, let me give you a little bit background to end off the class. We have a traditional way of study. When I was growing up, I was exposed to the traditional method. My mother, give her the credit, my father made no decisions. I come from an era where the men worked and the women ran the home. So my mother transferred me from public school at the end of first grade to Yeshiva Salanta. With that simple step, she would later affect hundreds of lives of her direct descendants and tens of thousands, if not more, across the Jewish world. Much more, of course. I have to count my nephews of Rashi Yeshiva, etc., etc. So my mother transfers me, and in fifth grade, I start Gemara. Now you can imagine, an American kid, you start Gemara, Eila Mitzit, Eila Chayav Lachachril, I mean, what is this? Does it speak to you? Well, I had a teacher, not even totally frum, but a big Zionist. I've explained this, I write about it in Washington. And he said, it's like a prize fight, a heavyweight championship, Joe Lewis versus Joe Walcott in those days, 47 or so, 48, 47, 46. Round one, Abaye. Round two, Rabba, Tashma, Tashma. Wow, I got interested. And I have to admit, from that day until today, and I'm no youngster, a day doesn't go by when I don't open a Gemara. All right. That's the traditional method. Went into high school, went into college, had the greatest rebbeim. Not one of my rebbeim was American-born, Shanghai crowned. Rabbi Michal Katz, who you know, knew, he was an interesting individual. I write about him. He, born in Eastern Europe, went to the Litvishi Yeshiva. His father winds up in America for a few years. He winds up in Israel to America. Many influences in his life. Rav Yosef Weiss, Hungarian, marries Rav Shimon Volkirch's great-granddaughter. Rav Noach Bornstein, Riska Rav, Rav Yerucham Gerelik, Rappen. Rav Shmuel Eze Volk, Kelj. Boyu Rebbe Hamuvak, Rav Soloveitchik. Many influences. Many different upbringings, but all of them the same way, including the Rav. The Shir is the traditional classic Shir. Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos, Ramban, Ravid, Chaim, Ktzais, Netivot, classic learning. You never asked yourself, when was the Gemara written? Which one daf? How many generations are represented? Who's the Rebbe of whom? Is this the proper text? Dov, you're getting a Gemara that was copied by hand 50 times over until it was printed the first time. You ever play post office? B'nai Akiva, we would whisper something to the first kid and the 30th kid would give back a sentence totally malconstructed. You never ask these questions. What's the influence of the Greek Roman civilization on the Gemara? How come there are words in the Gemara that are not Aramaic, Greek, Roman, Midrash? These are very interesting. Never ask them. With the Enlightenment, a new approach began. It was a general approach in the entire world, but specifically Zuntz, Leopold Zuntz, and others brought it into the world of Judaic culture, Judaic civilization. And that gave birth to what became formally known as Wissenschaft. Wissenschaft des Judentums, scientific Jewish scholarship. In modern Hebrew, Yomo, it is called, it has a technical name, Chochmat Yisrael. Some people use a more defining name, Mada HaYahadut. But I have to tell you, Mada HaYahadut, most people don't know what you're talking about. Chochmat Yisrael, they know. Mada HaYahadut is basically more correct than Chochmat Yisrael. Mada HaYahadut is Wissenschaft, is scientific Jewish scholarship. But what is this all about? It's taking the classic texts, and it has nothing to do with religious belief. You can be a tzaddik yesod olam, or you can be a total apikoros. I told you, there's no guarantee. The Rav described, I quote him in my work on the Rav, that he went to visit a Talmud of Reb Chaim in Berlin. And this Talmud threw away all of Yiddishkeit, became a very famous mathematician. He worked with Einstein, a Gaon, had a Goynish Kav, but instead of what he learned with Reb Chaim was that... So the Rav found him learning Gemara. And the Rav, he said to the Rav, I can't hear myself away. You follow? Yeah, I told you the story years ago. I mean, Mididi HaViyuvta, I was walking up Rehov Asa with my closest friend, Tzvi Gronin, it's a world gone by. Rabbi, Dr. Professor Tzvi Gronin, make believe you heard the name of the Gronin family, so the ignorant pass for the wise. Moshe, who was the Lubavitcher Rebbe's right hand, alive until today, should live and be well. Reb Label Gronin, this is his nephew. So I'm walking up the street, we're walking up, it's right before Yom Kippur. And right in Rehov Asa, there's a barbershop. And out of the barbershop comes a guy, just had a haircut, and Tzvi embraces him, and they, oh, ma shlomcha, Allah. And we say goodbye to him, we walk up, and I say to Tzvi, who the heck is that? He says, you saw that Jew? Yeah, it's not from, no kippah. He knows all of Babli and Yerushalmi by heart. That's the Chatam Sofer Zanur Enikl. That's Professor Zussman. Look up the name. Tzvi studied under him. And then Tzvi pauses. I don't think he fasted on Yom Kippur. You see, you can be... to teach in Yeshivas Yerushal Chavim, I don't believe there was any Rebbe that ever taught there that Chas V'Chalila did anything wrong halachically. Right or wrong? Yonatan, right or wrong? I don't think there's any Rebbe who taught in Ramaz, who taught Yosef Chaim Klausner. No. I still, my heart is heavy, and I buried two female students afterwards. One from Machon Goldsu, the sweetest, most filled with Yirat Shemayim girls I ever taught. Tabia. Too bad there's death in the world, that's all I can say. But I don't believe in Ramaz. There ever was a teacher. Where did you go to elementary? Manhattan Day School. No, did you ever have a teacher there who taught Gemara who wasn't the Yorei B'Shalim? But you see, these are two different approaches. To be in Talmud Torah, basically, you have to live it, you have to feel it, you have to be part of it. When in this classroom, I hope you feel, I'm not the only one sitting here. The Rebbe is sitting here, Rebbe Moshe is sitting here. It's a different experience. That's Talmud Torah. Chochmat Yisrael, scientific. For you it can be holy, sacred, but it doesn't have to be. It's a different approach. On Talmud Torah we make three brachot every morning. On Wissenschaft, if you treat it Talmud Torah plus Chaim, quote me, Talmud Torah plus, then you make three brachot. But otherwise there are people who are Professor Zussman at a certain stage in life. It's no different than biology, chemistry, mathematics. Dov Zakai has a relative who's a great mathematician. Does he make three brachot before he goes into the classroom to teach mathematics? No. No, Chachmat Yisrael. Follow the difference? Now, I'll end off and put it together. What was the machleket about? Rav Hirsch was a total traditionalist. Any innovation, he was frightened, is part of the new world of enlightenment, of reform. A different approach? Not the approach of our forebears, of his teachers, Chacham Bineis, Rabbi Yaakov Atlinger, apikorsis. Rav Hildesheimer, the Hildesheimer Seminary, Wissenschaft. Nothing wrong with it in the service of Torah learning, traditional context. But we're smarter today. We have new approaches, new tools, libraries, manuscripts. We can work out proper texts. We can learn Greek, we can learn Latin. It's a different approach. Wissenschaft. Moshe, if you studied in Hildesheimer, you couldn't get rabbinical ordination unless you got a PhD from a neighboring university. It wasn't like YU, wasn't under one roof, but when you were serious finishing up your doctorate, they allowed you to take off hours from the seminary to go to university and finish up your doctorate so you could get ordination. These were two different approaches. And Rav Hildesheimer represented one, Rav Hirsch represented the other. And the animosity was very strong. The Hirschian approach, and it's interesting because Rav Hirsch, it's not just in this issue, he was a big conservative with a small c. When Rav Mulliver, Rav Kalisha, there's correspondence, contact him, it's Rav Kalisha, and wanted him to join in the Zionist movement. You know what his response was? What you consider a small mitzvah, for me, it may be a great sin. Masha Hu Kaza, I once quoted it from the text. And you know what's amazing? 100+ years later, 150 already since Rav Hirsch was in his prime, all of Kibbutz Adati is a result of Rav Hirsch, Torah V'Avodah. Even the frumest among the frumest, they established Shalavim, Chafetz Chaim. But all the kibbutzim, wherever you go, you'll find Bar Ilan University. Half their faculty traces their origins to Torim Derech Eretz and Wissenschaft. It's very fascinating. You throw an idea open and your Talmidim take it further and further. And it could also be with the Rav, that the antagonism to the Rav by some of his Talmidim, Rabbi Rubin just claimed that he read David Hartman in the original. He doesn't have to quote me now. He read David and he couldn't believe what's written there. But you see, they take the Rav way beyond what he said. And then they're angry at the Rav. Hartman, Greenberg, Cardoza, Lopez Cardoza. They're angry at the Rav that he introduced us to the Western world and didn't take us further. In other words, it's not just enough to be a Torah Jew in the Western world, but why can't we innovate? Hartman writes, this Kohen going with this Giyoret, she's a tzaddikit, she's frum, she's intelligent. The Kohen is crying, I want to marry her. Personal happiness has to come above the halacha. Cancel, negate, abrogate the halacha. You understand what that means? It's the end of Judaism. I said it in class. I guess Rabbi Rubin doesn't believe me when I say something in class, but he read it. He's shaking today. All right. Rabbi Greenberg, exactly the same thing. Lopez Cardoza. All in writing. Don't have to believe one word I'm saying. But you see, Rabbi Hirsch had a certain viewpoint. Baruch Hashem, I'm the happiest person alive that they took the Torah Derech Eretz and translated the Torah V'Avoda, Torah L'Atmat HaKodesh, call it what you wish. Bar Ilan University, there's a pro and con, as we spoke about the Rackman Institute. There, I'm not happy at all. But there's other work being done in the history department, the Talmudic department, where we have every right to be happy. I know not such a young lady anymore, did a PhD, a brilliant thesis. It's Rav Dov Zlapnik's daughter, Rav Aaron Kirschenbaum's daughter-in-law, if I have it right, did a brilliant doctorate on furniture and the time of the Talmud. You should see what that lady accomplished. Wow. You can now understand anything in Kalim. You can look it up and find a picture, a description, sources. Wow. My dear students, to reiterate, first of all, I want to thank everyone who came. It warms my heart. I see a Panim Chadashot here. After class, explain to me whether you're a voyager or a serious student who wants...
I've been listening to you for many years.
What's your name?
Mr. Lazarus.
You corresponded with me on coming in, Baruch Hashem.
My wife and 5 kids made Aliyah because of you.
Baruch, you make me very happy. I just told someone this morning, I've done so many mitzvot in my life, like lekecha shichacha mepeya, that you don't know about, but you do good things, and people pick up on you and take it further. I was telling Rabbi David something also, another part of that. Welcome. So what's that? So you're all here? Or you, what do you do?
Programmer.
They're looking like crazy for
programmers. I work from here remotely.
Yeah, but you work in the States. They're looking like crazy for programmers here. They tell me, wow, I have grandchildren involved. Anyway, let it stand. Let's finish up here. I want to thank you. Thank you for coming, Baruch Hashem, and telling me such wonderful news. Because what you just said, remember, I've seen life. You came with your wife and 5 children.
You just had a daughter, first daughter.
So it's Zlaimit Mazel, Sabra. So you look ahead 50 years from now, how many of your descendants will be here? At my last big birthday party, I was overwhelmed. My direct descendants filled the whole shul. All right, not the size of Gilet Yeshurin, but little more than a shtibel. And I have to tell you, since then, we've increased quite a few times over. So I'm very moved. The same thing with Russia. People, and the Russians, this one's not... You make a couple from, you make... It's unbelievable what comes out of them. And I've seen it with my own eyes. Baruch Ani Modala Kadosh Baruch Hu. Thank you for the good news. So what did we do today? We set the stage for Melamed Lahoil. Next week's shiur is very, very interesting. And you'll see it's a stepping stone into the Rav. And you'll see the similarity in thinking. It's unbelievable what I'll be able to show you, black and white. And very fascinating individual. But Rabbi Nasha Klein, Kvaldo B'mkoma Munach, he's 100% opposed. For good reason. Chilul Shabbos is Chilul Shabbos. I mean, you can't do what we say. He said, this is from Menashe Klein. And the reason he gives, I mean, the high point of today's shiur, his description of Buchenwald. That imagine Rav Schechter, if it is Rabbi Schechter, it has to be ascertained, but I would imagine it is. It's Buchenwald, and he liberated Buchenwald. Comes in, it may even be the picture I saw in Washington, it's a famous picture, was taken that evening, that night. Some Goyish photographer from the army took a picture. I see they're circulating pictures here of what the Sapmaruv did now, or whatever, for bringing on Shabbos, they bring in Goyim to take movies. How they're Matarit, I don't know, maybe they have a different religion than Rakefet, but I can't be Matarit. Fascinating. But then the issues he raises, the crucifix, you're standing next to a bed of a Catholic who wants to mention Jesus, the Trinity. What are you? You're obligated by military law. Think about it. Preparing for battle, which is a shayla that wants to see. All right, tomorrow, very fascinating material. Tomorrow, we're ending off for a blaze of silver, but what I have to talk about tomorrow, you won't believe your ears. But I can show it to you if you have eyes. I'm not making it up. It really happened. And it's a sad commentary on America, the rabbinate, the balabatim, what we go through. And then we start shifting gears to the Rabbinical Council of America. So, Be'ezrat Hashem, we have a lot to do. Now, the freebies. To my dear student, Chaim Goldberg, are you making progress in reading Hebrew? Here, do you get this? The headline, Tironim Politim, Politiyim, Tironim Politiyim. You know what that means? See, this you have to know what's going on. Tironim means the army, basic training. You're called the Tiron, you're just beginning. How would you translate that into English? Basic trainee, what's the word in English for him? A Tiron in Hebrew, is there a word for that? A guy coming into the army knows nothing, not even a private, a corporal. So here, these guys were major generals of the army. They ran the army, they ran the show, the most important people in Israel, basically. Without them, we wouldn't be alive. They're now going into politics. So their first beginning, Tironim Politiyim. A rookie. But what were they saying the army is their word? They wouldn't use a rookie. Rookies for baseball, a tyro. Chaim, this is for you. Chaim. Moshe, excuse me. Speaking of his grandfather. Your grandfather can't come. He doesn't have the lift. I don't know what to do. This is for your grandfather.
I don't know what I'm saying.
This is for Yitzchak. How do I get it to Yitzchak? No. Yitzchak,
do you have email or you have to like scan it and
I don't want to drive Sherry crazy, but we'll see. Maybe that's an idea. This is very fascinating. Two copies. Remember I said that Rabbi Mandel grew up in Boston and knew the Rav. Then I get a correction that he grew up in Kew Gardens Hills and then went to Harvard for his doctorate. That's where he knew the Rav. Then the family gets in touch with me. He grew up in Boston. I was right the first time. Anyway, these are articles that he wrote observing the Rav. It appeared on the Rav's 25th yahrzeit. Very, very fascinating article and a very beautiful picture with it, where the Rebbe is asking him, where did you get the ring, how did you buy it, who paid for it, and everyone is laughing, because obviously it was the Chatan's ring that he bought and is giving to the Kala. Here, very moving article. Anyone interested in Russian Jewry, this is... I listened to you from Baltimore. My wife had you as a teacher in Machon Gold in 1978. You should tell me your wife's name. Let's see if I remember her. You may have already heard with her maiden name. You have already heard about this, but if not, I thought you would like to read this. And it tells the story of Sherwood Basson, Canadian National Junior Hockey Team player, that he would be leading the Canadian team in the hockey junior ice hockey World Series championship 1983 in the Soviet Union, and he got the group to smuggle in Sidurim and I believe it was Taliyot for the back at the hotel. Baskin collected the shawls and prayer books into a big carpet box. He ordered a cab to the Great Choral Synagogue, Leningrad's only shul, and he schleps the box in, and the people look at him with such suspicion. What is this tourist bringing us? And when they open it up, I still to this day remember their eyes. Beautiful story shows you the power of Am Yisrael and the dedication. Very interesting article at Harvard, a symposium on progressive halakha. It's all Orthodox people from all parts of the spectrum about changes in halakha. Rabbi Ezra Schwartz of Yeshiva University was there. Other people, you'll read it. You can draw your own conclusions. Fascinating. President's Conference warns the Zionist Organization of America to tone it down. They're upset with Morton Klein. He's too vociferous, a right-wing Zionist. Very sad story. Hillel finds complaints were justified on sexual harassment by donors. Imagine donors who give you hundreds of millions of dollars and they have wandering hand trouble. Unbelievable. I can tell you, until the Me Too movement, this would not have made the headlines. Today, it's unbelievable who they have accused and they found guilty. Here's the big question of humane slaughtering. Are you allowed to stun the animal? I gave Shurm of about a half a year's worth on this many decades ago. And now in Belgium, it's become halacha lemaisa. In Ireland, it's become halacha lemaisa. Guts are lapidin. This is an unbelievable article where people start to discover how they were conceived. And here's a religious girl who stands out as a sore thumb because of her looks, her blonde hair, her blue eyes. And it turns out that it was AID, a booster shot. I went into this many years ago. It's also in Wakafet Aron, Chelek Gimel, a booster shot to the husband's sperms, so that really she was conceived by a non-Jew. And she finds this out. It's very interesting. It opens the whole Pandora's box today when some of this information is made available. Is it good for the Jews or bad for the Jews? On one hand, it's very good, so a brother won't marry a sister. On the other hand, it can create emotional problems of the highest order, emotional and psychological. All right, Nekavela Tov, once again, many thanks for being here. Until we meet again in health and happiness tomorrow at 9:05 a.m. Gus Fridania. Thank you. Where do you live?
In
Be'er Sheva. In Be'er Sheva. So you came special. Oh, I have to.
Yeah, we were here for since careful. July.
You're here since July.
But, my wife is pregnant, so gave birth just a few weeks ago.
And be careful. I'm going to. Where in Be'er Sheva do you live?
I live at the edge of the old city. It's called Neve Ofer.
Of course, my brother began in Be'er Sheva, but that was 73.
It's an amazing moment for you to finally meet you. We're listening for many years. Many years.
Where did you go to college?
Some of the states, all over Florida, but mainly in Florida.
And high school?
High school, part in New York, all over. Family.
Names, give me names.
You actually read, interesting, a few weeks ago, a letter from my father with the Rebbe. Dr. Lance Leadership. That was actually my father.
It took me many years, but
making Aliyah.
But one second, you have Chabadnik?
Yes.
So wait a second, you have Chabad in the Sheva, you have Chabad.
I don't know, we moved there by ourselves. We're here.
No, but in Be'er Sheva,
oh, is. Yeah, we're part of a group that's trying to make a yeshuv.
Beautiful.
That's it,
yeah. Beautiful. So here you see a living achievement of what we talk about in Chabad.
You have many people listening to you, don't realize how many.
Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem.
Many.
Yeah, but you see in the Kollel, they claim these classes are too much above them. And I don't know, 20 years ago, there wasn't a kid who would miss a class. But today they claim the Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch, it's the art scroll generation. And it's a real problem.
Thank you very much, really.
Rachav HaTzlacha.
Amen. We owe our life to you. We really came here because of your classes. So. It was a hard move, but we did it. And we were very happy. No regrets.
Okay. One second. Who corresponded with you 100 years ago? Okay.
I have some letters from you.
Well, one second. I'll show you. One second. Let me see.
Can I get a picture too?
Yeah, sure.
Let me take it.
So long.
So now you have a sermon to show what Lekat Shechel. You do things and you don't even realize.
But I was hoping to meet Yitzchak too.
Is that where he is?
It's a shame.
You probably don't know how many people consider you the Rebbe Muvah, including myself, who you never met.
No, that was the first Rebbe he ever had that spoke to him.
We've been listening to you since Florida and Buffalo.
Yes.
That is.